Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello, welcome to the Sunday Roast. Once again, we've got the regular gang, Phil Carroll, Kevin Hornsby, and Albert Arthur. How are you today, lads? Are you doing okay?
Very good, thanks, Zach.
Super good and getting better, Zach.
Right, yep, okay.
Good from my side.
Was it a good week? Last time we left Albert, he had his hands full. But have you recovered from that, Albert?
Yes. It was a good experience, a lovely experience, life changing potentially.
Teas and the chorizo. Yeah. I've got that picture in my mind. I just can't get it out. You know,
it was really good. Actually, I think I might have met my soulmate randomly, which is a bit strange, but. Yeah, it was really good. So it's going well with
Jack. Strangers in the night.
First
exchanging glances.
Well, apparently it's always good at the beginning, Albert. That's what they tell me.
Yeah, that is what I found.
That's the technical analysis on that one.
Yeah. So she's assisted in my garden and told me to buy an egg chair, which I did, but cancelled because they were out of stock. I hate that when you order something. And it says it's in stock, and then you get an email saying that it's going to come in 6 months' time. So I've cancelled the egg chair, but I've done some other decor around the house after her visit. I'm trying to get a relaxing trading environment set up. So everything in my house is perfect. You don't want to wake up and things not look right because it'll make you buy bad stocks. That's the way I see it. Positivity. So this week, what have I done? Oh, yeah, today was interesting, actually, because I had to do a speed and awareness course. And it was someone did actually message and say, is that for AIM? You know, because of the tickets of stocks going up too quickly. But no, it was a real one. And I was in the room today thinking, how's this going to go? And there was a guy called John in there, and he told the instructor to f***. There was a guy called Terry who thought you could go 70 mile an hour past a school. And it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. And then there was a guy called Paul. And I don't know if you've ever done one, but you go on a camera and the instructor's on you. If you're looking away or you've got your phone in your tail, the guy called Paul, Paul's falling asleep. He's like, Paul, if you do this one more time, I'm going to have to kick you out. Get up on your chair. It was a nice end to the week anyway. But as far as the markets go, it's a strange one at the minute, isn't it? I'm still very bull bio and all of this. I've not done a lot, really. I've been taking positions in with what's going on with the mutations and the vaccines. Scancell SCLP is looking very, very promising as a big, long investment, because what they do is that they have a vaccine. Jonathan Ball from the University of Nottingham is working on it, and Janet Daly, who's worked on the universal flu vaccine. And their approach for this is these vaccines at the moment are kind of a sticky plaster, and they target what's called the S protein. When the S protein mutates, that they have to like re-change the vaccine slightly. Scancell's approach is different. They're going for longevity in the vaccine and a universal vaccine. And what they're doing with that is they're targeting two of the proteins, the S and the N protein. They're currently having it made by, I think, Cobra. About 6 weeks ago, it was on Sky. They're on Sky News. I've never seen an AIM share so connected to mainstream media. You're talking Financial Times, Sky News, BBC News. They're always on it, all of them. John's on it quite a lot. Janet's been on it. They're on the local radio. But what I like about it is, and this isn't why I've invested, boys, I live near Nottingham, and the vaccine is being, you know, made by people that are so close to me, Nottingham, Trent and Nottingham University. These guys are funded by Red Mile. They've got, I think it was 15 million funding, and they actually work with cancer vaccines in a similar way. And when COVID came along, they decided that what they would do is apply this type of vaccine to COVID. So they're targeting the two proteins, and by targeting the N protein, that protein, it doesn't mutate like the S protein. So there's a real potential here for a universal vaccine that's targeting on the longevity, to keep it simple. So this yearly vaccine jab that you have, whether it mutates or not, there's double the chance that with this vaccine, you just have one shot a year. No need for a top-up. Targets all mutations. So for me, this is looking like a really big one, and I've been building a position in there for about 3 months now. I keep trying to take the last tranche, and about 3 months ago, with the mutations coming in, I think they had selected a different candidate, vaccine candidate. They when the mutations started coming in thick and fast, they decided to go with a different vaccine, the one that targets these two proteins. So in the way it's going now with the COVID, these treatment is here to stay, it looks, and a vaccine like this looks perfect for an investment for me. Not that I want to make money off investing in vaccines, but you can also see it as you're assisting in, you know, getting this vaccine made and out there so we can get back to normality. So that's the only stock I've really been buying. I've noticed the crypto's going down, and you know, it'll probably go back up next week, but I did stay away from all of that stuff. There's lots of things on the horizon coming in. I mean, Deep Verge has got some bits and bobs going on. I think they're going to have some water news coming in the coming weeks related to water surveillance. So some of the ones I'm in at the moment, I'm looking for new ideas at the minute, but everything I'm holding is kind of got that catalyst in the pipeline. And for me to get some more funds, without doing my garden up and buying these egg chairs and so on, I need to slice things, and I'm not ready to slice anything at the minute. So it's nice to have a couple of weeks a year like this where you focus on yourself a little bit, just watch, you know, hold your positions, and there's the old selling may go away thing going around, isn't there? And crypto's going down, but you're seeing some cash injection back into some of the stocks because I think some people have been stung on the old crypto. They're jumping out back into the stocks, and they'll probably jump out of the stocks back into that next week here. So yeah, volatile, strange markets at the minute, but I'm happy with everything I hold. And I've not sold anything this week, but I have been adding to the scan sale. And if John is listening to this, it'd be amazing to have you on here because your work is outstanding. Professor Jonathan Ball. And it would be great to chat to you about your thoughts on where COVID's going and also talk about some of the vaccines you've worked on and so on. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing this week. Egg chairs, vaccine investments, and texting the lovely Jasmine.
Well, I'm glad that you've been having a constructive week, Albert. Should we go on to Kevin?
So, as I said last week, I wasn't going to trade at all this week. Just going to sit on my hands. So I managed that till 3 p.m. on Monday. So that was impressive, 6 hours. And then I traded, shock horror. It's been a funny week. My portfolio is exactly the same, pretty much like 0.1% lower or something than it was at the start of last week. Been building a position in Life. Been increasing my position in Zoetech, or is it Zoetic? Been practicing that one all week, Zoetic. Zoetic's been very strange this week. Market makers were playing silly, silly games on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, dropping the SP with UTs right at the end of every day. And then it stopped. And then, yes, more and more people, I think, in the group were buying. Though the volume's still very low. I'm just waiting for any news now that's going to increase this volume. And I really think Zoetic's going to take off. We've seen many, many pictures all over the US now of the products in the shops, in Smoker Friendly, in many of the different shops. So I can see revenues coming in. These display cases are only half full. So people are buying the stuff. So it's happening, you know, it's starting to happen. So I'm getting excited about that. I'm getting excited about Life. I think Life should be good. RMM, another 19% this week. So 3 weeks on the trot. I think it's gone 18%, 25%, 19%. And we're still massively undervalued, you know, still not even at 60 million, I think it is, and in market cap, and it's worth 100 million plus easily. price of copper is going to an all-time high. It's like 430 something at the minute. I think 450 per pound for copper is the all-time high for copper, and they're predicting it's going to go to £5 and more. And we've got copper and gold and silver, and those have perked up as well, I think, this week. So that all looks promising. So nothing much more to report about what happened this week. And I'll talk about what I think might do well over the next week or two later on.
Okay, that's great. Over to Phil.
Yeah, cheers, Zach. Not the most entertaining of weeks, really, on the market for me in terms of the portfolio aspect. As Kevin just alluded to, Rambler Metals had another good week, or should I say, it started its long anticipated and long overdue re-rate. Her volume increased massively, and it peaked around the 0.63, 0.64 mark. So, you know, since we've talked about it on here, it's done, I think, about 100% to its maximum. I think it finished at 0.56. So very good performance, really. And again, it's been one of Kevin and I's, conviction play. We talked about conviction plays last week. You buy into a stock, you've done all your due diligence, you've done all of your research, and you're absolutely, you know, you can never be 100%. You know, you can never account for some, you know, a company delisting or going through some sort of litigation claim or something like that. But as sure as you can be, you know that that stock is undervalued, and you know that it is going to have its day and the eventual re-rate. It happened with Oriole Resources, which we've talked about in the past, and it's happened now with Rambler. So fair play to us for getting that one right. The other one,
I just want to stop you there, Phil. Because you know, there's a lot of like pundits around. I mean, there's been millions before us, and I'm sure there'll be millions after us. If, let's say, when Rambler was 0.32, 0.33, it started going down. You know, it's going down 0.25. Yeah. Then the next week 0.25, then 0.2.
Yeah.
You're sitting there. You know, you're long up to your eyeballs.
Yeah.
It's not going the right way. When would you just keep coming on the show and saying, oh yeah, Rambler, yeah, I know that the fundamentals have come out. Yeah. I know it's right. Because I mean, you always see the brave face, the brave face sort of thing. And the first there's a denial, and then there's a this, and there's a that, and it's a, oh, I'm adding to my position. I mean,
buy more.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of people probably come on and they shout at us, or they're screaming at the radio on a Sunday, the wireless, as my granddad used to say. screaming and going, you pumpers, you rampers, you know, you get all the usual comments, but we're not ramping. We've talked about the stock, and we've told them it's a conviction play. Now, whether they want to listen to that or not and do that, you know, obviously they seek financial advice, of course, before doing anything, any investment. Okay. Whether they do that and actually buy into a stock is up to them, but I just hope that they're thinking, it was on my radar, I didn't buy it, and I regret not buying it, because that's I hope people have made money on it, and I hope they're still holding it.
But I mean, there's the other thing, like, there's people who said, oh, Metro Bank, right, it's trading at, you know, a quarter of its book value, it's a third of its this value, its NAV is three times the price, it's got, you know, it's £3, it's got to go through, it's got to go back to £10. And now it's like, you know, £1.20 or something like that, and they're just sitting there dying, you know.
I mean, the thing
that was a conviction play. When I hear the word conviction, a conviction trade, I actually start start shaking, you know, because I think this person, it's either just a buy or it's not a buy, and you can't be that sure. I mean, Syme is a conviction buy for like half the world.
Syme is another conviction buy, but unfortunately, and that was going to lead on to that, but you've already done that for me. Thanks very much. Syme was another another delay today from Syme. Inevitable RNS comes out, you know, bad news, sell off, and then a slight recover. And I wanted to mention something that Kevin mentioned earlier, which I've noticed a lot this week, and it is starting to really grate, and it's the fact that these market makers, at the end of the day, on the quite a few stocks that I've been in this week or I am holding, they've dropped an uncrossing trade, okay, right at the, like, you know, usually report them about 16:35, 5 minutes after the market has actually shut, closed for the day. And what they do is it takes the price of the share up. So it finishes up, say, 14%, for instance. Say they were at 2% up on the day. They throw a trade in that's nowhere near any sort of, like, there's no way that trade has happened within the last 4 minutes, right? It comes in and you think, oh, great, you know, it looks good. We finished 14% up. And then what they do in the morning is they open it around about the last normal off-book trade, as they call it. So the last normal trade that went through, the off-book, and it drops down 14-15%. So it opens up, you know, 15%, yeah. And then that causes a massive panic. And you just sit there and you think,
yeah, it's kind of a bit of fear mongering. What if you actually look under the hood at what's going on in that scenario? What you'll find is you get a load of bot buys to satisfy the book. It's like a bot's pumping the book.
Yeah.
And then it does this dodgy uncrossing trade, because what it will do is with the uncrossing trades, it loads the book with the buys and the sells on the book. So if you put a load of low sells and high buys on it or something like this, yeah, and you overload it one way, then what happens is that uncrossing trade comes in and satisfies it.
Yeah. Well, cheers for the explanation. And so that's Simi, you know, again, it's a conviction play for me. It will come good, I believe. But with AZ in charge at the moment, unfortunately, if he continues with these, you know, the schoolboy errors and putting timescales on things, then he needs to stop that, because it creates panic and fear. So critical.
Just to finish that one on that one, because I know there'll be people saying, like, who do these guys think they are and all this sort of stuff like that, which is understandable. Simi, like, it peaked the other week at, you know, 0.6 or whatever it was, 0.7. It's now riding high at 0.35. Kevin's, you know, done a runner. What part of that is, you know, it's like nearly half price, you know, let's say, and, you know, so how does a conviction thing work on that?
Because you ignore any near-term, short-term trends when a stock, you know, stocks never go up in a straight line and remain going up, you know, every day. They don't increase by 15% or whatever. You get retraces, you get panic sellers, you get market corrections, you get, you know, external market forces, a bit like Argo blockchain has been affected by Bitcoin. Now, there's always an external factor. Copper prices drop, it drops the stock. So you've got to look at the long term. You know, I don't even look some days. I actually, the best trading days you get are when you don't check the stocks on an hourly basis. You check them at the end of the day and you get a nice pleasant surprise that your stock's done 30, 40, 50% one day, and you think, excellent. And it just, you know, I've got to the point now where I'm not checking them every hour, because...
Well, with accuracy, you've got no choice, because you don't get the price until the end of the day. I mean, it comes from the back of a camel or something, or a donkey.
It comes to fundamentals, doesn't it? It's fundamentals. Why have you invested? I don't even look. I just know why I bought it. That's why I can't sell anything.
And you've taught me that. You've taught me that old patience element. If you believe and you've done your due, you invest and you go in. Anyway, that leads me on to another stock that I've been buying this week. And it also leads me on to introduce our very special guest this week. Martin Churchhouse, CEO of Carus Minerals, CMRS is the ticker. Welcome, Martin.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for inviting me on.
Not a problem. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your company, a bit about Carus?
Sure. We're a copper and gold exploration resource development company. We've got a suite of exploration licenses, which are all in Cyprus. We were admitted to Standard List LSE about just over 4 weeks ago now. And our licenses host about just under half of all the former producing mines in Cyprus. That was a deliberate strategy of ours to acquire brownfield licenses. Clearly, brownfield implies that you've got mines or former mines, producing mines. So we know that the geology is receptive for the copper mineralization we're looking for. And also that brownfield strategy, it gives us the optionality. It basically gives us access to a whole host of different resource options or types of resource that we can target. So we have the residual ore that was left when the mines closed prematurely. We've got the extensions to those. We've got dumps, ore stockpiles, new surface deposits like the ones we found last week. And then with the VMS type mineralization, we've got the lower grade disseminated stockwork type copper gold mineralization and hopefully new discoveries. The optionality, it doesn't imply or mean that we have to focus solely on dumps or on hard rock resources. We don't think that they're mutually exclusive, and you know, they both go down the same processing route at the end of the day. We're fortunate that a lot of our licenses host modest size but very high grade, near surface, easily accessible VMS type lenses mineralization. Yeah, some of these are, well, most of them are in the sort of 100 to half million ton range. Grades can be as high as sort of 4% copper equivalent. So, you know, you're sitting there with something that's close to surface, easily accessible, and it's $360 a ton in the ground. So for us, we see that as the sort of the catalyst to then go off and evaluate the dumps and the lower grade resources that exist. If we can mine these high grade lenses and pods, cover our capex and generate some excess cash, it means that we're then sitting there also with a plant that we can, you know, is available to us to start looking at sort of processing things like dumps. In terms of our capital structure, it's 50 million shares, 59 fully diluted. Novum Securities is our broker, and we have, it's just about 40% of the stock is held by the board. We chose Cyprus and we chose copper, or Cyprus principally because we decided from the outset that we wanted a European-based asset. And we also wanted something that would allow us to sort of hitch our wagon to the clean energy transition that's sort of taking place. And copper was for us the obvious metal of choice. You know, we know that it's getting harder now to find friendly jurisdictions where you can find good quality copper assets, but certainly Cyprus is one of those. We've got a favorable tax regime. The mining legislation is unambiguous. It's good legislation. But I think key for us was that Cyprus, it has this sort of unusual history or legacy that sort of created a unique set of circumstances that we're sort of buying into. And that all started in 1974 with sort of the Turkish invasion, which caused most of the mines to shut almost immediately. A couple of them sort of stumbled on until about 1977. But essentially you had a thriving industry that switched the lights off overnight. And the sector at the time of that sort of premature closure was still relatively immature. So most of the mines were still processing the near surface, easily accessible, highest grade resources that they could find. You also, you know, because of when all that was taking place and because you're only looking at the high grade material, there was no attempt historically to mine any of the lower grade material or any of the stockwork. All the heaps and dumps that are now carrying the secondary copper minerals, of course, heap and dump leaching was still in its infancy there then, so that really didn't have any relevance. And then the other thing that's sort of working in our favor is that at the time, gold had a nominal value for all producers. There was a strange situation there where the Cypriot government had first right over all gold that was produced in doré or in concentrate, for which they were paying a nominal sum of about $35 to $37 an ounce. So, I mean, the joke apparently amongst all the mining companies was that, you know, that just about the value or the revenue they got from gold production just about covered the cost of the Christmas party. So in a pretty short space of time, they all stopped exploring for gold, and then eventually they all stopped assaying for gold. So, you know, that now, of course, we're looking at gold at sort of current spot and things, so that makes a big difference. The other thing that whilst we're looking at sort of VMS deposits and, you know, VMS camps or VMS camps, the difference I think with the Cypriot deposits are that with one or two exceptions, you're not looking at 100 million ton deposits. You're looking at moderate size, compact, but high grade to very high grade deposits, which potentially are only going to require, because of their proximity to surface and the rest of it, going to require modest capex to develop. It's very simple processing technology as well, which should mean that, you know, you're looking at a shorter lead time to cash flow and potentially bigger margins. And as far as copper is concerned, yeah, our view is now's the right time to be in copper. We think the price is going to remain strong for the foreseeable future. I mean, I saw the other day that Goldman Sachs are talking about $11,000 a ton within 12 months, and Bank of America is talking about gold getting to $3,000 within 18 months.
So Martin, sorry to butt in. So if you could get the same valuation of gold or copper as, say, a 15-year investment, which one would you go for?
Copper,
yeah. So copper, you're focusing on the copper, the EV green type of angle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's ubiquitous. I mean, it's found in every single one of the main clean energy technologies.
Yeah. So other than copper, I mean, I've been looking at metals, and there was always gold was a bit of a go-to in the recession. I've invested in copper, been looking at uranium. What other metals do you think are going to be really good in this EV green revolution?
I think obviously, I mean, if you're talking sort of battery storage and things, then you're looking at things like lithium, nickel cobalt, of course. That's still got, there's still opportunities there. And outside of that space, probably silver as well. The huge demand for silver. And if you look at some of the stats that have come out from some of, I think it was Rio a couple of years ago, have silver, right at the top of their list, I think mainly for solder. But that would be my
question. So many industrial uses, hasn't it, silver?
Absolutely.
I've got a question. So I think I saw on your website, you talked about the capital structure, et cetera, and the number of shares.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I saw a statement that said, that as an institution involved, is it a company called EV Metals or something? I think they're based in Australia. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And what is the relationship with these? I mean, is that somebody that the board of directors know, or were keen to speak to you beforehand to get involved with the company?
They were a company. They're individuals that we know. We've met them in the past, and. Their principal focus at the moment is on the construction of a very large lithium production unit in Saudi Arabia. I think that it's somewhere in the tune of about $400 million. And they also have a large nickel cobalt position with a project up in sort of northwest Australia. But they also recognize that copper was missing from their sort of clean energy portfolio, which was part of the reason for them investing in us.
Yeah, cool. So just looking at some of the highlights from the due diligence that I've looked at on the new prospect, the plutonic resources, obviously there's an acquisition that's taking place, and obviously there's going to be an AGM involved for the vote. Three licenses within that acquisition or that business, is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
And from the due diligence that's been the initial drilling, visible gold at surface. I mean, that was the standout bit that got me from the RNS. To see, could you describe a bit more about the results and what was found?
Yeah, sure. It's that was on the Trulli license. That's one that was mined back in the part, or partially mined back in the 60s for a VMS. And there were some very old gold workings at surface, but not a huge amount of work had been done on those. We just part of the due diligence, we could see it's sort of epithermal type mineralization. So we stuck a number of percussion holes in there, and random samples from surface, as you say, were returning significant amounts of coarse visible gold. I think probably as important as the visible gold itself, we thought that zone was going to be 2-3 meters thick, but we drilled down. I think the deepest intersection we got was about 25 meters. And we don't know the full extent of that epithermal zone yet.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's a fault that runs right the way through that license. And the high grade sort of copper VMS with gold credits was somewhere on the other side of the fault. And we did drill one deeper hole, which actually penetrated that VMS. Yeah. So yeah, it was it was sort of three darts in the triple 20, really.
It sounds like you've hit the ground running. It sounds like you had some very encouraging results so far, really.
Fabulous, excellent results. And we'll go back there. I mean, as I think you're aware, we've moved on to we're doing some drilling now, just trying to work out where all the secondary copper minerals are in the dumps at North Matiatis, one of our other projects.
Yeah,
we're about a third of the way through that. Once that's finished, we'll take the rig back to Truly, and we'll stick some more holes in there just to try and flesh out the sort of the size of the epithermal zone and to drill deeper into the VMS.
Yeah,
Kokkina Petra, which is one of the other licenses we've acquired, that's contiguous with Truly, so that's right next door. We've got gold at surface there, but that's a blank canvas. So we may stick a few holes in that, or we may just do a little bit more work on that one first.
Seem to know a hell of a lot about all of this, Martin. How did you get into this? What was your driver to get into the kind of resources sector? How did it all start for you?
For me, I'm from lived in Cornwall most of my life, and my father used to he was a director of Holman's Compare. Used to make rock drills and compressors, and I used to be allowed to go and mess around in the old Holman's had an underground mine where they did all their test work, so I used to hang around there a fair amount, and then I went on to School of Mines and started my career at Geva Tin Mines, and then moved on from there, really. So it was inevitable that I was going to get into the mining industry.
Yeah. Did you climb down the mine?
They sneaked me in a few times so I could have a look around.
Yeah.
I love a story like that. And Albert does, you know, it humanizes the whole thing. The fact that, you know, you used to explore and, you know, I mean, look, like you mentioned Cornwall and Devon, and I mean, Cornwall in particular, all the old tin mines are now still, not all of them, but they're starting to open up. I mean, Cornish Metals just listed in the last kind of 2 or 3 months, so that there is a big demand now for tin, you know, the copper, you know, the solder uses and within the actual industrial use of tin is massive. So it's brilliant to hear a story like that. The other thing, York report, I mean, like, obviously I've invested in miners in the past, mining companies, and the big question is, you've got your York 2012, and then you've got, you know, moving from an estimated to an inferred, and then from an inferred to an indicated. So obviously we're right at the beginning, or Keris is right at the beginning of that stage. When would you expect the first JORC report to maybe be materialize?
Well, I think for the first JORC report is only a couple of months away at the most.
Okay.
You know, I think we are, again, because of that brownfield strategy, we're actually quite a long way down the development curve anyway.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, it's not a blank canvas. We know what's there to a degree. We've got those residual resources. We've got those gems that I talked about, which, you know, are partially drilled out already. So it's a case of getting back in there and just, you know, putting some judicious drilling just to prove up those resources. And then hopefully, you know, underpinned by secondary copper in the dumps and things. You know, the beauty of it is we're not looking at porphyries or mega deposits where we're saying minimum 5 to 7 years before we've got a resource or anywhere near production. So it's a lot sooner than that.
Cool. I mean, like, so if we look at someone like Chesterfield Resources, who are obviously in the Cyprus jurisdiction, and they are an explorer rather than they're a mining explorer, exploration company rather than an exploration company and a producer. Do you see Keris becoming moving from the exploring element into potentially selling some of the processing? You know, you talked about leaching. I've seen it mentioned in the RNS. There's flotation methods. Can you talk about how you could potentially monetize some of your assets?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, if you go back to look at the technologies itself, I mean, flotation technology is it's been around for a long time, and it's relatively simple. And, you know, it's quite benign. It's a sort of technology ministries and mines departments and things generally don't have a problem with permitting. Because it's not something that is likely to to cause any trouble, and it's well known and understood. The type of deposits that we're looking at, the mineralogy is simple and straightforward. The copper is easily extractable. And because we're ostensibly on most of our licenses looking at a coarse gold component, a fine gold component, and then we've got the either the oxides, copper oxides or the copper sulfides. You can float off your copper oxides. You can then sulfidize everything, and you can take that same plant and you can now float off the sulfides as well. Mm. Yeah, the fine gold will come off in the sulfides and you'll end up with a copper gold concentrate. And now, technology is such that with cyclones and other sort of gravity type equipment, you can take all that coarse gold or the majority of the coarse gold off at the front end. So it's all relatively simple and straightforward. And I think the other big benefit of this type of technology is it's also modular. You can move it around. And two, if you want to go big, you can go big.
Excellent. I mean, we talked a little bit about yourself. I mean, could you, Mike Johnson, who was awarded warrants or shares in because of the fact that he'd worked tirelessly for the board, for the company, and hadn't drawn a salary. And I saw an RNS talking about, in recognition of the work he's done, and he's foregone any future salary. And obviously you've he's been remunerated in the form of warrants or shares. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Do you want to talk a bit about his background, about his involvement? Is that on the Rio Tinto advisory board?
He consults for Rio, still does. He has a environmental engineering background. One of his areas, fields of expertise, one of many, is in mine site rehabilitation, and also he's very good on the chemistry as well. So it's a huge asset for us because. When it comes to looking at the various sites, particularly the brownfield sites, where we're going to be doing some cleaning up as well as part of the process going forward, it's extremely useful to have that expertise on hand. And as you say, he has not taken any salary, and he doesn't intend to take any salary. He's one of the founder shareholders. He provided working capital in the early days, he's a huge asset to the company.
Yeah. I think
go on,
Albert.
I was just going to say, how are you finding the COVID situation in all of this process? Are you struggling with that, or is that something?
Not at the moment, not too much, for two reasons. One, because because of modern technology. I mean, one of the big jobs we've been doing, we've got a massive database, and we've been able to shift that database around the world to various experts who are working on it, cleaning it up, tidying it, converting a lot of it into sort of 3D models and things and digitizing it. So we can provide the guys on the ground with access to readily accessible, easily interpreted data. That's been going on in the background. But I think the other thing is that our exploration team is all Cypriot based. So they've not been restricted to the extent where they're all in country anyway. And I believe today that the Cypriot government is letting, if you're involved in business and things, and if you've you're tested and all the rest of it, I think they're just about to start to let people to go back into the country for business purposes, which means that we can bring in geophysical contractors and others, which is excellent. So yeah, to answer your question, it's not been that bad.
If I was to give you a magic wand and you were 12 months further down the line, what sort of tonnage per day do you think you will be pulling out the ground for copper in 2-4% scenario?
Interesting. It would be very nice to be in a position where we were taking out somewhere, let's say 500,000 tons a year. Let's see, say initially, you know, somewhere between 300 and 500,000 tons of high grade material on an annual basis initially, and then you start ramping up from there.
So you're talking about maybe 1.5 tons a day or something like that.
What's that work out at? I mean, that's say half a million. We're talking about 2,000 ton a day.
Okay, so 2,000 ton a day, and you expect that will be 2, 3, 4. What are you hoping for?
In terms of grade?
Yeah.
I think to be conservative, I would say plus 1%, 1.5% copper equivalent.
Hello, yeah. And the gold, what sort of number of ounces do you think this 500,000 tons will produce?
That's a difficult question to answer. The reason being, as I mentioned before, we know there's gold in the system, but we don't know how much because nobody was assaying it. So we're starting from scratch now. We were looking, we would have been happy with 0.25 grams per ton at Truly, for example. It's going to be considerably more than that. So it's difficult to say. My guess is the deposits are going to range anywhere from, with copper being the principal mineral recovered, a metal recovered, I think our gold grades are going to range anywhere from, sort of, say, 0.2 up to 1 gram. And we're going to have to do the work to figure out what's there.
Yeah. So on average, you might be talking about 0.5 gram and copper 1 to 1.5%. That's what you're looking at.
Ideally, that's what we're looking at. And then I think as we progress a few years down the track, we'll then hopefully be looking at the stockwork type mineralization. So, I mean, essentially you've got these massive sulfide lenses, which is what's been mined, and where we've still got these lenses still to for us to exploit. But they sat on or sit on a lower grade stockwork type mineralization. And based on some of the very old historic data that we've seen, expectations for that, and we're talking sort of bulk tonnage there, expectations for that are somewhere in the sort of 0.5% copper and 0.5 gram per ton gold type range.
Yeah, okay. Still sounds good. But what sort of mine life are you anticipating?
We've set ourselves an initial target of putting together a 10 to 12 year life of mine.
Okay, good.
And at more than 500,000 tons a year, obviously, as things progress, but starting at sort of 500,000 and then moving up from there. So 8 to 10 years.
And at peak, you hope to do what? A billion tons, 1.5 billion tons, what?
A million tons would be fantastic. I think we'd be happy with that. I mean, this sort of comes with a health warning, obviously, but if you look at all of our licenses and all of our residual resources and all of the dumps and the stockpiles and everything else, and then a bit of projection, there's probably, we think internally, maybe 20 million tons at the moment. That's without us finding anything else and without drilling any of the stockworks. Now, I'm not saying all of that is mineralized, and I'm not saying all of that is viable, but it's somewhere in that range. So, if we get 50% of that is processable, then there's your 10 years, and that's without us doing any exploration.
Yeah, so you're going to have some easy wins, obviously, with all these stockpiles, I would imagine.
Yeah. Absolutely, definitely easy wins. And I think we've just got to, we've just got to be sensible and use them wisely. There are quite a few of these easy wins. Some of them are 100,000 tons, some are 500,000 tons. But we want to make sure that we squeeze every bit of copper we can out of each of the licenses. So, we'd rather take a, a high-grade lens or two, and find a way of blending that with lower-grade dumps, just to maximise our sort of copper recoveries, rather than...
Yes, I understand. Okay, sounds good. Good luck. Hope it all works out.
Thank you.
All right, Martin, I just wanted to interject as the person who knows the least about mining around here, probably the least about everything else as well. £7 million market cap, or just under at the moment. Yeah. Your ex Anglo-American Goldfields, and you've got the professor there as well, which sounds pretty good. Three projects and less than 60 million shares in circulation. So it looks like a very tight offering. It looks like you've got a lot in a very small company, or the market is saying, well, we're not valuing you very highly at the moment. What do you think is valued in the price, and what do you think is not valued in the price at the moment?
We've only been sort of exposed to the market and talking to people for 4 weeks, 4 weeks. So we still need to get the story out there. I don't think people realise how far we are down the development curve at this stage. I think that is significant. I think that people started to take notice when we put out the detail on the due diligence drilling that we did, and I think that will increase. We'll go back there. We'll start doing more drilling. We'll start then being in a position where we can start fleshing some of these deposits out. And as I mentioned earlier, we're only a month or so away from converting some of these to JORC 2012 resources. At which point, I think people will realise, as I said, we're that much further down the development curve, starting to build a decent high grade copper gold inventory.
Yeah, I mean, it's compelling cases, really, isn't it? It's the story's compelling. You've got a low float. You've got an EV company on board, or a large institutional investor behind. You've got obviously a very small market cap, as Zach just alluded to. It's 6.87 million. You've got an excellent board of directors, London, yourself, you've got Anglo-African, you've got the whole Rio Tinto side of things as well with Mike. And you've also got the fact that you're in a safe jurisdiction, and it's easy and quick to market. You can start generating revenue very, very quickly. So for me, as soon as I read these things and put it all through, the spider senses are tingling. It was just an absolute no brainer to get invested and obviously invite you on board. I reached out to you, and I just wanted you to be able to get the story out there, really, because it seems massively undervalued. And I was just reading actually earlier on before the call this the results from the channel sample lens at Truly, and I saw the gold grade on channel 3 at 2 meter length was at 19.65 grams per ton of gold and 16.15 grams per ton of silver. So or it's only 2 meters, but looking down channel 4, 14, 7, these are not, I think you were being pretty conservative when you talked about 0.5.
Yeah, possibly, but I don't mind being conservative in there. let people judge when they sort of see the numbers themselves. But yeah, look, I mean, it's I've been exploring and mining for quite a few years, and it's not that often that you see visible gold. So when you do, it's clearly you're onto something.
And it's not Africa, it's this, the whole safe jurisdiction of Cyprus. It's just, it's excellent. Well, thanks very much for coming on, and wish you all the best. And
So have you taken a position, Phil?
Yeah, I just said earlier on, it's one that I've been talking about last couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
I was waiting for the site visit.
Taking a position, so
I did actually say today, I was talking to someone about Cyprus, and I said, now we can fly in.
Site I'm visit, happy. Martin?
I'll come and kick some rocks with you on site, Martin.
No, we're going to have to, we'll have to do site visits. I mean, of course, that's the beauty of it as well, is that it's, from most airports in the UK, it's a four-hour flight.
So we can get Albert to come along, and we can go to Ayanapa.
Ayanapa. Not too far from Egypt either. I can jump on a plane.
Phil's so manly, he's so alpha that he wouldn't even need a helmet. He'd be down there. He's dig stones out for you down there.
I'll pick him out with my teeth. but the other thing is, Albert, is like it's so close to Ayanapa. So if you came over, you'd end up spending all day like chatting up the ladies in the bars rather than going digging for us.
Oh, no, I'm not like that. Not like that anymore. That's the old days, not Ayanapa. Maybe Ibiza to the old town.
I think he thinks that Jasmine's listening.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. He's playing a bit of a, you know, the slimy snake now, isn't he?
Oh, no, that was a natural response, honestly.
No, it wasn't.
Old Jasmine.
It was.
Honestly, you came with that same.
I saw your GIMP room earlier, so...
That's my gym. And in my gym,
there's a dungeon in his garage, boys and girls.
Well,
be careful.
Actually, what it is it's my old place that I used to live in. And back in the day when we were all really immature, and I still am a bit immature now, me and my friend, we used to say we're not human, we're androids, half human, half androids. And we moved into this place and we always had a name for our houses. And what one of them was called the P-Pop, which meant the Protein Palace of Positivity. And then, this is going to sound a little bit crude, another one was called the PPP, the Pie Palace. And then,
yeah, I think there might be a beep or two in that one.
And then when I moved into, we called the place Mars. It was called the Mega Android Resting Station. And when I moved out of this place years and years and years ago, I had all the memorabilia from there because it was things from when I was in LA or Miami or Ibiza or the south of France, Villefranche-sur-Mer or anywhere. And it was memorabilia of a great life. So what I did is I turned my garage into a gym, but then I put all of this memorabilia around, and it's even bags that I would carry to the beach on a day down the beach. And for me, when I have a very high pressured stress day, I just go in there. There's a disco ball in there, and I just do a little workout or run, and it's pure escapism. And I sent a picture of it today to Phil, and he was laughing. And it's funny because I showed it to Jasmine, and she said it looks like a sex dungeon, and it actually does. But it's just good. I like it in there.
I'm sure we didn't think
you were weird at all.
No.
Well, when you work in, I've worked for years round the clock. I mean, through the night, all night, and you need to just chill. You need a place where it's not like anywhere else.
I think Martin's probably thinking we've had a really serious side talking shares and talking bods and talking like mining, and then he's thinking what is the other side of these? What sort of lives do these deviants?
Well, that's the thing. You build the positions, you do the research, do the analysis, but what you really need is you actually need to have escapism and need to be able to relax, else you go mental.
Yeah, I agree. It's a high pressure. It's right. A high pressure kind of job, isn't it? And you need that. You know, it's like the Japanese. I used to live in Tokyo. They work hard, but boy oh boy do they party hard. You know, their definition of partying hard is having two shots of whiskey and then they're drunk. They can't handle like alcohol. They are proper. They've got a missing gene, and then they're rocking on the subway. Like you walk on and they've had two. It's like the sniff of the barmaid's apron and they're drunk. They're gone, but they're enjoying it. You know that's the way that's the way they party out there. Karaoke bars as well is another one, but.
On to Albert, actually, just given that you're on a roll at the moment. So what's going to be happening in the dungeon next week?
Right, for me, so I've mentioned the SCLP. I've looked at what's gone up since the COVID pop, 2020, 29th of March, and I've looked at what's gone up by hundreds of percent, and I'm looking to potential reversal positions of those. So I'm looking at what's gone down and what's gone up, and I'm looking at things that are cash profit hungry, the winners of the industry that are going to be big in the future. So I'm trying to take positions and things nobody's looking at before they're big. That's what I'm doing. I love everything I hold too much. Everything's got a fundamental idea. I'm still very bull bio. I'm going for the vaccines, the treatments and the water surveillance and all of this. I've got, I still hold Drum, which is cybersecure. It's hard to get interest in that. It's Angus Forrest's project, and I've still got a SPAC on the go, which is a bit of a hit and hope on a, you know, gambling machine. But if it comes, I can't sell it because if I sell it, it will come in tomorrow. So Yeah, so I'm in that position at the minute, bio bull, but I'm looking for reversals that nobody's buying at the minute. I'm doing some deep analysis on that at the moment.
Well, thank you, Albert. Really appreciate your taking time out from the kids.
After he talked about his sex game.
I'm really looking forward to editing this. I'm really, really looking forward to
it. You should just leave it in, man. It's natural, you know. You don't need any edits.
Okay. So next week, as I picked my healthcare last week and I didn't do anything, that's still running. So except my healthcare is still my pick. It's going to happen. I think 17th of May is coming pretty fast.
You mean my health
PCR tests are coming. It's going to happen. The revenue is going to go through the roof. I'm sure of it. Maybe there's contracts coming. Maybe there isn't. But I don't think that's going to make much of a difference. I'm expecting 10p, 15p, 20p within the next 2 or 3 months maximum, because the revenue is going to be very apparent very soon. And my pick for next week is also the case. Yes, I'm totally biased. How'd you say it again, Zach? Zoetic?
No, Zoetic. Get it right, Zoetic.
Okay, so my pick for next week is Zoetic. Or is it Zoetic? Sorry, Zoetic.
Are you really saying that it's like the shares have come down, like just being a little bit, a little bit sharp. The shares are down from £1. They're like 65p now, right? There's been a bit of a negative re-rate there. And they have actually come up with some good news in the interim. What's the next driver though? Because I'd like to know what the next, I'm a fan of the stock.
I think it could happen at any time. RNS for the ability to sell the smokes in the UK, the chill brand that's coming to the UK any moment. We just don't know exactly when, but they said in the announcement that it would be in the second quarter. So we're talking anytime now, basically, really in the next few weeks. And really the rollout that's going on in the US. I mean, they're selling these things now in the US and probably in 1,500 plus shops already. They're going to be in 3,500 by July. I've run the numbers with very small sales, and the revenues are huge, and they're there. They're selling them. They're not giving it to us in numbers as yet. So you can wait and pay twice the price for the shares, or you can get in now, which I think is bargain basement price, around the 70p. And yes, I think you're going to double, treble, quadruple your money before the year is out. This is my call. And okay, I've said it all along. I'm certain this is what's going to happen. The shorts are now starting to get very scared in this share, because they know the minute revenues are announced, they're going to get burned. It's going to be a bad day for them, a very bad day. So this is going to happen sooner or later. It's so tightly held, the share, that it's going to go. And as soon as the revenues come out, that's what's going to happen. Anyway, I have to finish my weekly life situation. Okay, life is exactly the same as it was last week. Finished at, I think, 3.98, 3.974, whatever, around 4p. I've added more myself this week. It's looking very strong. Once the churn goes, I think it's going to do well. But more importantly, the donations that have come in now, I'm now up to £8,700. So in the last week, we achieved another £3,000 for the school that we want to set up here in Cairo. So I'm very happy with that. Thank you for all the people who have contributed. And yeah, please keep it coming. We want to try and aim for between, I was saying 10,000, but now I'm saying 20,000. So let's hope we can get this money. Life gets to 10p, and in Rambler Minerals or Rambler Minerals or Mining, it's 1p. So you can give me a donation if Rambler gets to 1p or if Life gets to 10p. Take your pick. Okay. Or we should actually have a Zoetec gets to £2, I think. This is another good one. I will talk to them about it in the group. Anyway, I finished my piece. I think MHC is going to go. Zoetech's going to go. Life in the next month to 6 weeks is going to go. Fast Forward's going to go, et cetera, et cetera. RMM, I think, is just going to continue.
Do we have anything new?
Yeah, I mean, I've built a bit of a position this week in a company called Apollon Formularies. They're on Aquis, and they used to be Afri AG. That's one of Lenny Gass's old companies, I believe. And there's been an RTO in, the guy who runs Apollon is a guy called Stephen Barnhill, and he's a very interesting character. It's a Jamaican medical CBD play, okay? And it all started out that he's a doctor, and his mother was very ill, and she basically had I think there was cancer, esophageal cancer or something along those lines, and she had problems with swallowing. And anyway, he started using medical CBD. It's a little bit like the whole Tony Calamita love hemp, and his business partner, his father, you know, developed cancer, and they were using CBD as an alternative medicine to help relieve some of the symptoms. Anyway, Barnhill has got this company, and he's got he cultivates medical marijuana in Jamaica, of all places. And he's got acres and acres of fields, but it's a bit like the Zoetic story. They actually cultivate sativa. So that's one I've been building a position in. I believe Lenny Gass has, David's got a position there from some of the legacy shares in his old company. So it's quite interesting. It's about 4.5p at the moment. It's not really moved much. So I quite liked I really got sold on the backstory of Mr. Barnhill, really. So that was one I've added. CMRS, obviously, we've just had Martin on. I'm going to continue building a position because I just see that as being a compelling story, as I said, and again, massively undervalued. And the other one, I'm running a book build at the moment for a company called Cloudbreak Discoveries, and they're in the royalty generation space. So they're a project generator for the natural resources sectors. They're a Canadian-based company listed. They were originally listed on Aquis under a company called Imperial X, and they're going for a reboot. Okay, they're going for a main market listing, and that will happen around June time. They've already got the FCA approval, so they're ready to go, and they've raised some money on a pre-IPO for with institutions on board. So I'm just I've actually got a call in the next 15 minutes with the CEO, with Kyla, and a few of my friends to help with a raise on that. So that's what I'm looking at, and it's quite a compelling story. Again, you know, they're investing in mining royalties around the not only the gold and copper plays, but also within the helium sector as well. So they've got Temas Resources, they've got Imperial Helium in Alberta, Canada. They've got Norseman Silver, which is a massive silver play in BC, in Smithers. Anglo African as well. So they've got a bit of interest within the African, within Guinea as well. So yeah, that's something that I'm looking at and seeing, you know, whether there's any real value in that. So it'll be quite an interesting call I'm going to have this evening with the CEO. So something to look forward to. But other than that, yeah, just continue building positions in what I call the conviction plays, as you know, Zach.
Sounds good. What, Phil, just one question before we finish. What, after we had... name escapes me. After we had the VLRM on last week, what has happened in the meantime?
Richard pulled. So Valerian, yeah, an update on that. So last week it finished around, I think, the 27 or 28 mark, probably about a week today. We had there was an RNS came out this week, as you probably know, that indicated that there was a they were already working with a North American company called Kayoduka, who were going to be helping them with the crypto mining space. And they had an RNS which stated that they'd actually got some of the machines, the rigs in place. Now, there was a bit of an uproar on the usual Telegram groups stating, these machines are, you know, that they're massively underpowered. They can only do something like 0.3 petahash. which equals 3 Bitcoin a year. So, you know, compared to obviously Argo blockchain, you can do something like probably 6 coins a month. Obviously, there's a big difference there because they've got the latest and greatest machines. Then there's no value in it. Now, as you'll know about Valerium, is they're not a one-trick pony. They're not just in the crypto mining. It's just one of the another string to the bow, as you say. They are also in the NFT space. They're also working on the blockchain coin, and they're also in the DeFi space as well, in the derivatives. So, you know, again, not a, as I say, not a one-trick pony. So don't get too hung up on that. The fact is they're going to be generating revenue anyway from the from these from, you know, within 30 days of starting the mining operation. So, as I say, still a very, very small cap. It's around the, I think it's about the 18 million market cap now. Very few shares in issue. So I think finished around the 25, 26, maybe 25, 26 mark. You correct me if I'm wrong.
24, I think it was.
Okay. So yeah, not brilliant. I mean, I was adding at 30p on the RNS. So, you know, again, you sometimes, I've been in for a while, and I've got a quite an early entry. So I've been averaging up, as they say, but yeah, it'll come good. And I think that the next catalyst for the movement in the share price is going to be the OTC QB listing in the US. So they're not just going to go for the pink sheets, penny stocks. They're going to go for the next level up, which is, you know, is a much better standard of clientele within that market space. So and I think with an 18 million cap, with being a miner and also within the NFT space, you look at some of the, I mean, look at Argo blockchain when they got their OTC listing, which isn't even, I think they're on the pink sheet. So they I think they did 5x or 7x on the listing. So I just see it as being the next catalyst in moving the share price forward. So for me, Valerium at 24 pence is just a buy. That's the way I look at it.
They've got some coins coming out as well, no, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So all the coin with in connection with Vinay Gupta. Yeah.
The derivative two coins, I think they were talking about. I didn't really get to the bottom of it, understanding it, but yeah. Or how they were going to make money out of it, but yes, it's happening.
Good.
Okay.
Well, I'll just wrap up now. I was slightly upset by the market decline on Tuesday. I thought that was quite nasty, and then we had the Biden capital gains tax. I suppose he'll backtrack on that, so it won't be as bad as it's supposed to be and everything else, but it wasn't a great week in on the sort of the bigger market, the bigger scale, and that didn't help. I think going into May doesn't help very much either, because, you know, it's getting a bit sunny and like time to go out and not sit in front of the screen all day, so there is that issue there as well. But overall, I think it's still a case of the quality situations are the ones which haven't suffered, and you've really got to find now the quality situations. You don't want to be left holding any babies like Albert is at the moment. You know, you really want to make sure that any stocks that you're in, you know, you believe they're solid or they are solid, but one or the other. You can't be in something which is just a bit flaky and you're trying to get in there for a punt. I think let's say Barren Oil, I'm sure a lot of people are in there just because it was 0.006 and it went to 0.009 or whatever, but maybe there's the fundamentals there, but I think just really need to make sure now that you're looking at something which is very nailed on, because when it goes wrong, the share price falls away really, really badly now. You know, you're 50% offside on, I mean, just a bit like with the Zoetic thing, you know, it hit a pound and it went back to 0.65. I mean, that was just in a heartbeat. That was without anything going wrong, you know, so the market, the money comes out of stuff really, really quickly, even on the good situations. I'm trying to think of, I think Ferro Alloy Resources, I mean, that was a good stock. Landor, they pulled the rug there, went up to 42, 43, and then came back to 34. The drops on these things are quite sharp, and that is something which I think newbies and, well, even oldies, I think the retracements on stuff are really, really painful. And I think it comes down back to your market maker thing, Phil. They're really enjoying themselves, because it's a bull market, but it's not like a
It's a bull market with a hell of a lot of novice investors who bed wet and pull and panic on, you know, the Symi thing. You knew it was coming. I knew it was going to open down. Any delay and there's people going, I'm going to sell out and I'll lose money. And that's how you lose money. It's impatient. It's petulant. It's ridiculous behavior. But we can't stop it. It's what creates a market. You know, they're the guys who are buying in and moving the stocks in the other way. You know, we complain when they drop, when they sell out, but we're not complaining when they're all chasing, you know, when the herd arrives. So, it swings around. It works both ways.
Yeah, but I mean, there was some you know, decent news out, I think, from Gunsin. They cashed in on some of their investments. Our friend Richard Polden at Wishbone, there was a good announcement there. But it didn't turn the dial or push, you know, it didn't get across. Because people want something which is literally, you're waiting for the new Messiah to turn up. And if it's not the new Messiah, then people say, oh, well, actually, it was a bit of an anticlimax. So that's it for us today. After my little rant, thank you to Phil Carroll. Thank you to Kevin Hornsby. And thank you to Albert Arthur, wherever he is. See you next week.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.